In 1904, German zoologist and parasitologist Arthur Luce was trying to figure out how a species of parasitic worm was able to infect humans. He hypothesized that they could actually worm their way through intact human skin. So, like many scientists of the day, he said, "Hey, why not experiment on myself?" He put hundreds of roundworm larvae on his arm, and just over 2 months later, he found fully developed adult roundworms in his feces. His hypothesis was right. Welcome to Orbitals, where we strongly recommend not putting parasites on your body, even if it's for science. Today, we're talking about Strongyloides stercoralis, a roundworm that crawls through contaminated soil in search of one thing, human flesh. Often no more than a millimeter in size, it's currently estimated to be hanging out in the intestines of over 300 million people worldwide. And how it finds us has a lot to do with the chemicals we're giving off. Strongyloides stercoralis, S. stercoralis for short, can be found in soil that's contaminated with sewage, fecal matter, and it usually makes its way into your body through your feet. If you're eating right now, maybe it's best to take a break the next minute. Okay, so how does S. stercoralis get from your feet to your feces? Once they burrow through your skin, they make their way to your bloodstream, and from there, your lungs. And this is where they get disturbingly clever. They'll irritate your lungs, making you cough, and as you do, the worms will come up with your phlegm, which you then swallow, allowing them to head down into your stomach and then small intestine. Once there, they'll lay eggs, those eggs will hatch into larvae, and the larvae will infect the tissue of your small intestine, but also come out in your feces, re-entering the environment, ready for the next person to pick them up. And because S. stercoralis burrows through your skin, you're always at risk for reinfecting yourself anytime you go to the bathroom. Yep, that works exactly like you think it does. There are also rare cases of person-to-person transmission at daycare centers, long-term care facilities, and with organ transplants. So I think it's fair to say that S. stercoralis is pretty prolific. I mean, hundreds of millions of people are walking around with it right now. I needed to learn more, so I called up Dr. Stephanie DeMarco, a postdoctoral researcher in Dr. Alyssa Hallam's lab at UCLA. Stephanie's work focuses on preventing infection, keeping those worms from ever finding us.
We are interested in understanding how these parasitic worms sense their environment. We're interested in understanding what sort of sensory cues, whether that's odors that they smell or chemicals that they taste or cues like heat, how they use those sensory cues to tell them, oh, I should go search for a host now, or oh, I found a host, or cues that tell them, okay, I'm inside a human body now. Now I need to go to the small intestine.
Okay, so first off, odorant or smell molecules, which include things like pheromones, are constantly coming off of our skin. This has nothing to do with hygiene. It's just the way bodies are. To us, these molecules are often undetectable, but to worms, it seems like at least a handful of them are intriguing.
It may seem odd to think of worms being able to smell things, but the way they sense odor isn't actually as different from us as you'd think.
For us humans, smell molecules will come into our noses and hit cells called olfactory neurons. They're actually pretty similar in structure to the ones you'd see in our brain or spinal cord. Each of those neurons has a specific receptor. When different combinations of molecules bind to their receptors, our brain gets this signal saying, hey, you're smelling cinnamon or vanilla or sewage.
It's an incredibly organized yet complex system. And roundworms have one that's similar.
In the case of our roundworms, they don't have nostrils in the same way that we do, but the way they detect odors is actually really similar. The worm has a really small opening at the tip of their head that's sort of like a nose, you could imagine, and this allows the receptors to be exposed to the environment of the worm. And so you can imagine if there's an odor that the worm really likes, the odor will then travel through this really small opening in the nose of the worm and then send a signal through that neuron that tells the worm, oh, there's a really good smell over here. You should move over here. They don't have the same sort of brain structure that we do, but They do have these sensory neurons, just like we do.
I asked Stephanie a bit more about the smells coming off of us that the worms might like, if there were any promising odor molecules that they or other research groups had found so far.
There's some work that's shown that this molecule called urocanic acid, which is really abundant on human skin, especially on human feet, is attractive to Strongyloides stercoralis. Some of the odor molecules that we've looked at, the attractive ones are like alcohols, 2-methyl-1-butanol, 3-methyl-1-butanol. These are known odors that come off of human skin.
So, fun fact, 3-methyl-1-butanol, also called isoamyl alcohol, is one of the molecules that hornets use to alert other hornets when they find prey. That's just one example of how interpretation of what an odor is so interesting. In the case of isoamyl alcohol, our brains interpret nothing while a hornet's brain is registering attack. So in a similar vein, it turns out that there's some overlap between the odors that mosquitoes and stercoralis think are interesting. Two of those odors are ones that Stephanie just mentioned.
If we can find a sort of repellent chemical, you can imagine that just like we have mosquito repellents, maybe we could make sort of a topical cream or aerosol that could repel these Strongyloides parasites. So you could, for example, spray it on your feet. And then if you walk barefoot in some contaminated soil, the parasite wouldn't want to infect your skin.
Another option is, instead of repelling them, to use those molecules we know they like and entice them away from people.
You can imagine if we find some cue that's attractive to these parasites that makes them really want to go through your skin, we could set up sort of traps somewhere that would have an attractive cue and tell the worm, oh no, you should come this direction and keep them away from people. And so that's the sort of big picture end goal of my research. It would be great to find ways to use these chemical cues to prevent parasitic infections.
Okay, so let's say stercoralis does make you its home. How will you know? The short and long of it is, you might not, at least initially.
This infection is actually usually pretty asymptomatic. So you might get a little rash where the worm comes in, or you'll have gastrointestinal issues once the worm gets to the small intestine. But for the most part, if you're healthy, you usually don't show a lot of symptoms. And so for a long time, this infection wasn't really known about. Whereas we have a really long history of people being infected with tapeworms and hookworms and other worms. But these worms actually weren't discovered to infect people until about the 1800s. And this is when there were French soldiers coming back from Southeast Asia, and they had these gastrointestinal issues. They had these sort of upset stomachs. And they go to their doctor. Their doctors found they were infected with these Strongyloides, these really small roundworms.
Now it's pretty easy to get tested to see if you're infected. Your stool can be searched for larvae, by a doctor, of course, or they can look for certain antibodies in your blood. But that wasn't the case back in the day. Like Stephanie mentioned, it wasn't until the 1800s, 1876 to be exact, that stercoralis larvae were discovered to be the cause of a broad range of symptoms, including a rash, cough, wheezing, and abdominal pain with diarrhea. And even after that, people didn't care all that much about them. But then, starting in the mid-1900s, these symptoms started to pop up more. In the United States, military veterans who returned from tropical regions like Southeast Asia and the South Pacific during World War II or the Vietnam War started to show symptoms, and sometimes those symptoms didn't pop up until years after they got back. Turns out, these worms can live in your body for decades without any scary health effects, until your immune system is compromised. If you've been infected by stercoralis but are experiencing minimal symptoms, maybe an upset stomach here or there, it means your immune system is keeping the parasite in check. When it no longer can, say in the case that you have a virus like HIV or you're undergoing chemotherapy, that's when things can get dangerous.
The infection can get really bad when you're immunocompromised. So you can imagine if you're going to get an organ transplant, the doctors have to lower your immune system so that you can take in the organ. Or if you're having steroid treatment for some sort of disease, that will also lower your immune cells, the amount of immune cells you have. And so when this happens, then the parasite can undergo something called hyperinfection, where they not only infect your small intestine, but then can go to your other organs and start infecting those. And so you have this huge number of parasites in your body, and eventually it starts shutting your organs down, and you can die from sepsis. That's what makes the disease fatal, is really when you're immunocompromised. Because most of the time, your immune system is keeping everything in check.
I asked Stephanie if maybe these worms were sniffing out a poor immune system, because that would be terrifying. But she assured me that that was probably not what was happening. At the end of the day, Esther Corralis needs you so that it can keep feeding off of you. If you die, they have to go to the trouble of finding a new home. And speaking of home, it's important to mention that although Esther Corralis is considered a neglected tropical disease, it's not just found in tropical places. You can find it everywhere, even here in the U.S.
So especially in rural southeastern United States, so like Kentucky or Tennessee, West Virginia, you can find places where these Strongyloides cercoralis have infected people. It's not a super common disease, but it's important to know that it's not only found in these foreign countries, it's also here in the United States.
At the end of the day, Stephanie is totally captivated by the science underlying how worms find us. But what she cares about most are the people this parasite affects and how what she learns in the lab might help them.
It's more really a disease of poverty. So you can imagine in places where sewage isn't being disposed of properly, there's not proper sanitation, that's really where you're going to find the parasite and how it's going to spread. And so that's why we see it not necessarily just in quote-unquote like third world countries, but it's also here in the United States in really well-developed places. It's important to sort of focus on that and sort of understand it as a disease of poverty, and that by improving sanitation, we can really lessen the transmission of the parasite.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Orbitals, a production of the American Chemical Society. If you liked this episode, please subscribe, leave a rating, and a review. This episode was written and narrated by me, Samantha Jones, and edited by David Vinson. Our executive producer is George Zidane. Our guest was Dr. Stephanie DeMarco. This is the final episode of 2019, so have a wonderful rest of your year, and see you in 2020.